Welcome. I would like to welcome you to episode 409 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I don't really ask you to agree with me. I'm asking you to hear me out. I'm going to explain myself so I don't sound like a hypocrite. That is how I'm going to start this episode off. Now, I don't remember if I said this on mic or, you know, having conversations with different people, but I know that I definitely said this. So if I didn't say this on mic, well, welcome. If I did, let me explain myself. Karl Anthony Towns tears his ACL. Back up. I'm not putting that on anybody. Knock on wood, I don't wish that on anybody. Let me back up. I was wrong. Karl Anthony Towns tears his meniscus. There you go. Not the ACL, the meniscus. And there potentially is a pathway for him to come back and play. Apparently it's not a completely torn meniscus. Part of the meniscus is torn. So whether surgery, rehab, I'm not too sure what has to happen, but there is a path, whether confident or not, there is a path where he could possibly play in the playoffs. Joel Embiid pretty much suffered the same injury. Joel Embiid, who was the leading candidate for the MVP, who was obviously the best player on the 76ers and gave them the best shot to advance in the playoffs and to potentially play for an NBA championship, that Joel Embiid suffered pretty much the same injury as Karl Anthony Towns. Now, obviously, the difference is this Karl Anthony Towns one just happened. The Joel Embiid one happened a couple weeks ago. And the reason why I started this episode saying that I didn't want to come off as a hypocrite and I'm going to explain myself is, again, I'm not 100% sure if I said it on the podcast, but I know that I for sure said it either, again, on the podcast, talking to friends, talking to people outside the podcast. But I share the sentiment that I don't think Joel Embiid should come back this year. I think he should, with him tearing the meniscus, I think he should just, even if there is a hope to come back, I think he should just shut it down this year. And I don't feel the same way for Karl Anthony Towns. Let me explain. You see, not only am I looking at the history of both players, but I'm looking at the current circumstances for both players. While Karl Anthony Towns has been injured in his career, he doesn't have an extensive history of injury that Joel Embiid does. And while, yes, Karl Anthony Towns is a bigger human being, he is not as big as Joel Embiid is. Remember, Joel Embiid came into the NBA with injury history. In fact, I believe he missed his first season due to injury. So when you hear about a player as big and as important to his team as Joel Embiid, and it's a lower body injury, it's a meniscus, there's always going to be cause for concern for me because you're already lugging around that much weight and you're already a 7-foot human being with an injury history. I don't want you to rush yourself back, force yourself back, and ultimately could potentially further damage your meniscus, or you can cause a bigger injury or a more serious injury. Now, that's not me saying that Karl Anthony Towns isn't important. In fact, one of the biggest reasons why I'm saying that both of these are different is because of how important Karl Anthony Towns is to the Minnesota Timberwolves. When Joel Embiid injured his or tore his meniscus, I said, not only is that an end for his MVP campaign this year, but the 76ers have absolutely no shot of advancing in the playoffs without Joel Embiid. And while they have put up a valiant effort without him, Tyrese Maxey has been really good in the number one spot. Tobias Harris has been playing well. Paul Reed has been playing good. Buddy Hield has been playing good. Kelly Oubre has been playing good. I think that the team has stepped up in Joel Embiid's absence, but they still have looked night and day compared to when Joel Embiid was on the court. I mean, I think when Joel Embiid went out, they were fourth or fifth seed. Right now, I believe they're seventh or eighth. So that should show you, even in this regular season, that they are going to, it's going to be a very, very tall uphill battle for the Philadelphia 76ers to compete in the playoffs without Joel Embiid. And selfishly, I don't want to, legacy is important at the end of your career. Obviously, during your career, you build up your legacy, but the legacy is important at the end of it. And the last thing that I want to do, and the last thing that I think Joel Embiid wants and Joel Embiid's camp wants, and honestly the 76ers want, is Joel Embiid to rush himself back, play in the playoffs, and get bounced out the first or second round. Seeing as though he has never been to the conference finals, that's just going to be yet another blemish. And not only do I think he's going to come back not in shape, and I'm not saying like a fat thing. I'm saying the only way you can get in basketball shape is to play basketball. And for someone that has a meniscus tear, that's probably not even doing much walking right now, I doubt he is in basketball shape. Not saying he can't walk, but I'm sure he's not doing full 5-on-5 drills. That wouldn't be smart, in my opinion, if you're doing that. That is Joel Embiid. Again, I don't think with the current state that Joel Embiid would be in if he came back to the team, I don't think that the 76ers have a shot of advancing. So not only do you lose your shot of winning an MVP because you've missed the so much time that you do not hit that threshold with the new NBAPA and the NBA has agreed to, you're not getting the MVP. You're not getting a pay bonus because you won an MVP. And to me, you have no shot of advancing in the playoffs. So I just don't feel like this is the smartest decision for himself to come back this year. I said all that to say, and why people could possibly look at me as a hypocrite in this sense, I feel the complete opposite for Karl Anthony Towns. You see, while Karl Anthony Towns is not the most important or the best player on the Minnesota Timberwolves, best and believe the Minnesota Timberwolves cannot advance or will not advance in the playoffs if Karl Anthony Towns is not there. Not only are you losing a perennial scorer, but you're losing your second best player. And to put that into perspective, Anthony Edwards is great. There's obviously debate that Anthony Edwards would be, could possibly be the face of the league when obviously, you know, 4, 5, 6 years from now. Yet and still, Karl-Anthony Towns is the one that had 62 or 63 points this year in a game. Albeit they lost, but still. The Minnesota Timberwolves find themselves in a very rare situation for them. And that is, they are currently the number one seed in the West. And they have earned the number one seed in the West. Again, contrast to the 76ers. The 76ers with Joel Embiid was, I think, the fourth or fifth seed. Currently, as we speak, the Minnesota Timberwolves are the number one seed in the West. And the Minnesota Timberwolves don't have an extensive history of playoff success. Yes, they've had great players like, you know, Kevin Garnett, Stephon Marbury. They've had Kevin Love, Sam Cassell. They've had an extensive list of good players. But they haven't really found themselves in a good position going into the playoffs since Kevin Garnett, honestly, was there. And again, remember, I don't care how good Anthony Edwards is. And this is honestly no slight to him. But even with him being the best player, there is no shot of them advancing in the playoffs without Karl-Anthony Towns. So I feel, because Minnesota doesn't really find themselves, again, last year they were the number, what, eighth seed? So to go from that to number one, they don't really, again, you need to capitalize on these moments because these moments don't happen that much for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So if Karl-Anthony Towns has a shot to come back, mind you, last episode I talked about contenders or pretenders, and I said that the youth part, because this team is so young, while they do have veterans, the Minnesota Timberwolves is led by youth. And because of that, it scares me a little bit as far as crowning them contenders. However, because they are one of, if not the best defense in basketball, that is why I put them in the contenders list. On top of that, you have the home court advantage because you're the number one seed. Again, you can throw all that out the window with Karl-Anthony Towns not being there. With Karl-Anthony Towns, the Minnesota Timberwolves have a shot to win an NBA championship. Without Karl-Anthony Towns, I don't see them. It doesn't matter who they play in the first round. It does matter. But if they play like a Golden State or if they play like a Los Angeles Lakers, without Karl-Anthony Towns, I do not see them advancing past round one. And Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't have an MVP to lose. Karl-Anthony Towns doesn't have millions upon millions to lose, I don't believe. And he has so much more to gain because, again, I feel if Joel Embiid comes back, because there's such an uphill climb in the East, whether we talk about the Boston Celtics, whether we talk about the the Milwaukee Bucks, it's going to be a tough, tough road, especially on someone that has torn the meniscus and has been out as long as Joel Embiid. Now, this could all be mute, and Karl-Anthony Towns can come out and not be able to come back. I understand. Obviously, I think that these players need to do what's best for them. If I'm just speaking on what's best for Karl-Anthony Towns, I would not come back. If we're just speaking on what's best for the player, which I'm always going to champion what's best for the player. Karl Anthony Towns should not come back, especially when you're a big man that has a lower body injury. You want the maximum amount of rest time, whether that is, and I understand what I just said, and I still stand on what I just said, but I'm looking at a player's perspective. Now, if we're talking about, you know, potential to win a championship and helping your team out perspective, I for sure would come back if I'm Karl Anthony Towns. Not as much for Joel Embiid, because I just don't feel, you know, with the time it's going to take for Joel Embiid to get back into basketball shape, which is going to have to be in the playoffs, I don't see it happening. But I do ultimately wish the best for both Karl Anthony Towns and Joel Embiid, both of them suffering a torn meniscus. Not completely torn, but a torn meniscus. I just hope for a speedy recovery for both. Both of them are very important for the game. Oh, man. Staying on the injury tip, you know why it's so difficult discussing Ben Simmons? Because it's difficult. You know what it's like? You ever had like a, when you were younger maybe, or even older, Christmas? And on Christmas, your mom, your dad, your parent, your guardian would have a bunch of stuff under the Christmas tree. And one box would not be wrapped, maybe because they ran out of wrapping paper, maybe because it was just too big to wrap. And it was like a bike, right? And when Christmas came, obviously, you got the bike, but what they said was you can only ride the bike on Mondays. So you're like, all right, bet. You know, you're still in Jubilee. You're still on an all-time high because you got a bike, and on Monday comes, you ride the bike. You ride the bike for hours and hours and hours on end. And then Tuesday comes, I want to ride the bike, but you can't. Then Monday comes again, you ride the bike for hours and hours, and you do this for weeks. But then, you can't ride the bike anymore. The bike's still sitting there, and you still see the bike, but you just can't ride it no more. And they say they need to change the wheel, but they never really change the wheel. I feel like I'm getting too deep into this analogy. The reason why it's so difficult to discuss Ben Simmons and to see what's going on with Ben Simmons is because we've seen how good Ben Simmons can be for a team. We saw Ben Simmons is an all-star. Ben Simmons, as we speak today, is out for the season due to a recurring back issue. And I think that he's going to get, you know, outside help and outside look to see. Apparently, it possibly can be a nerve situation. And if it is a nerve situation, I don't wish this upon anyone, especially if they don't want it to be, but if it is a nerve situation, there is a good chance that Ben Simmons could possibly not be able to play basketball anymore. Because once you have nerve damage, I think it's almost impossible to get it back. Optics is a thing. And optics can shape the way other people see a situation go down. Whether it's true or not, the optics is honestly what fuels how the public and how people outside of the situation see the situation. People probably remember that I was kind of harsh and I was kind of blunt, just talking about Ben Simmons' situation when he was with the 76ers and how, you know, how volatile it got at the end. And then him not only getting traded to the Brooklyn Nets, but then I believe suing the 76ers for, you know, payment. And even going with all this, he was still suffering from injuries in Brooklyn. And I came on here and was very adamant with saying that I didn't believe Ben Simmons because it was because of the optics. Ben Simmons, while he's had his great moments in Philly, and he was a, I think, a multiple-time All-Star, there's always been, ever since the situation, ever since that fateful game in the playoffs against the Atlanta Hawks, and Ben Simmons could have potentially, actually would have potentially won the game if you just laid the ball up over a much smaller defender in Trae Young. He obviously didn't do that. The media killed him. His teammates weren't really supportive of him on that, towards the media. His coach, who was Doc Rivers at the time, wasn't supportive of him. And that, to me, ruined any chance of Ben Simmons honestly returning to the Philadelphia 76ers. And it feels like, as I sit here today, and as we've seen what has transpired since, it kind of feels like that situation broke Ben Simmons as a basketball player, because we haven't seen, I think the stat is in 3 years, Ben Simmons has only played in 57 games, I believe. And still has collected over $106 million. So when I say optics, the reason why I was so adamant and so, I guess, non-believing of this, of the injuries that he was dealing with when he first came to Brooklyn, is because, again, how are you dealing with injuries and your main focus, obviously, is to get all the money that you were quote-unquote owed in Philly when you didn't even play? I think 3 years ago, Ben Simmons didn't play a single game. And that's another thing I was questioning. How did you pass the physical? Because you have to pass a physical to get traded. How did you pass a physical to get traded and you didn't? You very rarely played that year that you got traded. So I was very skeptical when talking about Ben Simmons and talking about his situation. Now, obviously, if, you know, Ben Simmons does have a serious injury, which obviously he's not able to play, if he does have a serious injury, I wish nothing but the best, and I wish nothing but a speedy, healthy recovery. At the end of the day, you have to do what's best for yourself. And I don't want anyone that's hurt to be hurt, you know? But one thing that I'm wrestling with is I don't think we've ever seen a situation like Ben Simmons. We've seen players like Greg Oden. We know how good Greg Oden could be. He just could not get over the injury bug. I believe that's why I don't want to call Greg Oden a bust, because he didn't put himself in the situations that ultimately led to the end of his career. It was literally he could not escape injury. Same thing with Brandon Roy, same team, the Portland Trail Blazers. Obviously, we've seen Brandon Roy in much higher heights than Greg Oden, but ultimately, Brandon Roy's career came to an end early because of injury. So, in those instances, I understand it wasn't as much as what they did, as much as they just could not get over the injury bug. It's hard for me to put Ben Simmons in that situation because of the optics. The optics look like Ben Simmons hasn't really cared about basketball for majority of his career. Now, obviously, this is somebody speaking from the outside looking in, so I could be definitely wrong. I don't have any sources. I don't have any insider. I don't talk to the Simmons family, like, and I'm not trying to desecrate his name. Again, I'm talking about the optics. I know how good Ben Simmons can be because we saw it. And that's another thing that frustrates me about this situation. We've seen how good Ben Simmons. Remember, there was a good time when we were debating if Golden State should trade Draymond Green for Ben Simmons. And silly me, I was on that boat saying, well, yes, you do lose a little bit of that locker room presence and that leadership, but you still get a young defensive, because Ben Simmons was on a defensive team maybe once or twice in his career, but he's a great defender. He can dribble the ball. He can do most of what Draymond Green could do at the time. So I've seen, and we have seen, how good Ben Simmons can be. But we've also seen what the optics look like. And it looks like Ben Simmons hasn't cared much about his NBA career. Now again, I could be wrong. Ben Simmons can, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like I'm wrong. And I'm not saying that, and that's another thing that kind of makes this situation a little bit worse than it is. I'm not saying that Ben Simmons is lying. I'm not going to accuse anybody of lying, especially if I don't know them. And I'm also not saying that Ben Simmons is not hurt. I think if Ben Simmons could play, he'd play. I don't know one person, whether professional, college, middle school, AAU, high school, rec, I don't know anyone that has the potential to play and that loves to play the game. I don't know anyone that would take themselves off the court and they didn't have to. So in that instance, I'm not saying that Ben Simmons is lying. I'm not saying that Ben Simmons doesn't want to play. What I'm speaking on is there have been times where it looked clear as day that Ben Simmons did not want to play. Whether that was a playoff game in Brooklyn and he didn't tell his team or the coaching staff until like 2 hours before or the day of the game, yeah, I can't play. I don't think I'm ready to go. His entire team thought that he was about to play until the day of the game and they was like, nah. Or the fact of, you're supposed to be playing. I went to a couple. Now, obviously, the pregame practice in the actual game is different. But I went to a playoff game. Me, personally, I went to a playoff game and saw Ben Simmons practicing hard as hell pregame. Now, I will say it was very interesting that in that entire time I saw Ben Simmons, because he was probably practicing for 30, 35 minutes. I don't think I saw him take one jump shot. He was doing a lot of passes and a lot of layups. But what I'm saying is the optics. That's what I'm going to keep going back to, is the optics. The optics look like Ben Simmons for a while now hasn't cared about basketball. And that is what I wrestle with, because the potential and what we've seen doesn't spell bust. But everything else we've seen spells bust for Ben Simmons. The fact that you were a number one overall draft pick. The fact that we've seen you on all NBA defensive teams. We've seen you in all-star games. And we've also seen that it looks like you don't care much about basketball. And that hurts for moments like now. And that hurts for moments or in moments when you say, yes, I'm 100% committed. I am 100% for this team and I'm 100% coming back to play. It's very hard to believe you because your actions have said much, much different. So I wish nothing but a speedy recovery for Ben Simmons. I hope that if Ben Simmons wants to continue to play, I hope that this isn't the end for Ben Simmons. I very much hope that Ben Simmons is able to have a long, illustrious career. But when we talk about the optics, for a while now, it doesn't look like Ben Simmons has cared about basketball. Or I'll say this, basketball, while it is his number one job and he gets paid handsomely for it, he doesn't get paid for his job because he hasn't played. Again, he's played, I think the stat is in 3 years, he's played 57 games. And to put that into perspective, one NBA season is 82 games, regular season. So, get well soon, Ben Simmons. Let's go over to football for a second. We talk about different teams, and one commonality in every team is culture. Not saying that every culture is the same, but every team tries to build their own culture. That's what makes teams different. Every team has a different type of culture. Now, people hope, and every team hopes, that their culture that they build, that they instill, ultimately leads to winning, but every team tries and essentially does build a culture. Not all cultures have led to winning, but I'm sure that the culture that has been built hopes to lead to winning. Some of it is a losing culture. That just is what it is. When you look at the history of a team, if there is a long-standing history of losing, there is a losing culture. Every team operates differently. Now, yes, obviously there are some similarities in, you know, your day-to-day as a athlete, as a organization. But every team is run differently because there's different people, you know, different owners, different GMs, different players, different coaches, different coaching staffs. Obviously, since there's differences, there is going to be differences in how organizations are run on a day-to-day basis. Not saying that one organization is better than the other, not saying that one organization is wrong and another organization is right. All I'm saying is there's going to be obvious differences in how things are done. Dalton Schultz, who is an NFL tight end, he just signed a contract extension with the Houston Texans. He was formerly a tight end, or the tight end for the Dallas Cowboys. And he was on the Pat McAfee show. Shouts out to Pat McAfee and what he has going on. He was on the Pat McAfee show talking about the culture and talking about the day-to-day as a Dallas Cowboy compared to the day-to-day as a Houston Texan. Now, obviously, I don't own the footage. I don't own the conversation. So I'll give you the spark notes, if I will. He was pretty much saying that there is a night and day difference between how the Houston Texans are run and how the Dallas Cowboys are run. And he said it's, quote, like a zoo in Dallas, whether you have, you know, tours going in and out while the players are there and while the players are working out. You have people tapping on the glass while you're trying to get a set in the gym. You have, you know, Jerry Jones and the media is always in Dallas. And it's just a spectacle is pretty much what he said on an everyday basis. And how that is much different from Houston. Houston obviously is not like that. It's not as global as the Dallas Cowboys. And he pretty much said that it's night and day different from the Houston Texans organization, the Dallas Cowboys. Let me first dispel something. You can feel how you feel about the Dallas Cowboys. You can feel how you feel about them being called America's team. You can feel how you feel about them in a sense of their lack of playoff success since, what, the early 90s. But a conversation that I've seen spiraling or circling this organization, circling this story, is the Dallas Cowboys a winning organization? And I think that we continuously get winning games and winning Super Bowls and championships confused. Well, yes, they do go hand in hand. Just because you realize that there's only one winner every single year. And a 32-team league, only one team wins. And I think in the last 3 years, Dallas has won 10 or more games in a season compared to a team, unfortunately, I have to put them in there. You know, I'm not even going to do that. I was about to put in my team. There are teams that haven't won 10 games in three seasons combined. Yet and still, Dallas has won, I think, 10 or more games in the last three seasons each. That is a winning culture. That is a winning team. Now, no, I'm not saying that they're a Super Bowl caliber team. I'm not saying that they're a championship team, but they are a winning franchise. I think that kind of what adds to the frustration and adds to the banter that is talked about that team is how you can be so good in the regular season, but when it gets to games that count and that matter in the postseason, you squander them or you just don't win. So in that sense, I understand where the public fodder and the conversation comes from, but you cannot have that conversation if we're talking about a quote unquote losing franchise. So Dallas is for sure a winning franchise. The winning kind of fades when it matters the most, and that's in the playoffs. But to go back to what Dalton Schultz said, titles, there are things that come with titles, and there are expectations that come with titles. People don't get to where they are without a process. And wherever you are, however that process went, it got you to that destination. Outside of obviously championships, there is a reason why Dallas is considered quote unquote America's team. I'm not saying Dalton Schultz is wrong for what he's saying. I'm not saying that he is either even bashing the Dallas Cowboys. What he's saying is there's a difference, and that is true. I'm almost sure the Houston Texans cannot run the same way that the Dallas Cowboys, because of the money that's involved, because of the cachet that comes with being a Dallas Cowboy. Now, I'm not saying that ultimately, obviously, that doesn't affect winning and losing on the field as far as the regular season, but yeah, I wouldn't expect the Dallas Cowboys to be run the same exact way the New York Giants are run. The Dallas Cowboys make too much money for the league, for themselves, to run the same way the New York Jets are run. And that's no offense to the Giants or Jets, but they obviously, if there's one team that I would think has public tours every single day, I would think it's the Dallas Cowboys. If there's one team that I would think doesn't really have much privacy as far as the weight room and your day-to-day process, I would think it's the Dallas Cowboys, seeing as though they're one of the most profitable organizations in the world. Every time that whole team worth or team, how much your team is worth diagram comes out year after year, Dallas is usually amongst one of those top teams. Every single year, you can feel how you feel. I obviously, being a Washington fan, I feel how I feel about Dallas. But one thing that I cannot disrespect is there a player's acumen or Jerry Jones as a businessman. He may be a spotty GM, but a businessman, he's spot on. So this isn't me bashing Dallas. This isn't me bashing Dalton Schultz. This isn't me like saying, duh. Like, I'm not saying that. But him shining light on the fact, I don't understand why there's so much people talking about this is why they don't win the playoffs. This is why they can't win that. No. Even with all that, they're still winning 10-plus games. They can't win the playoffs because they just collapse. Ain't got nothing to do with people walking around the facility doing tours. That's honestly how they get their money. Not just the tours, but being the face. If we're talking, we can talk about, there's a documentary going on right now about the Patriots and their dynasty. When we think about football, when we think about the NFL, and we have to attach the NFL to a team, it is always going to be the Dallas Cowboys because of situations like this. I put money, a losing organization wouldn't attribute that to them. I'm not saying, again, there's a difference between a winning culture and a championship culture. I don't think Dallas has a championship culture, but evidence has shown that they at least have a winning culture. So yeah, obviously Dalton Schultz, it's going to be different. Now, I will also say, and this is, I guess, me bigging up Dalton Schultz, some people aren't able to function and operate in that sense. And that is okay. It doesn't mean you're less of a player or you're less of a coach. It just means some players are unable to focus and give a 100% when they have so many eyes on them and when they're in that quote-unquote situation. It doesn't mean they're a bad player. I mean, obviously, Dalton Schultz is a really good tight end. It's kind of like the LeBron effect. Or let me take it off LeBron. It's kind of like the Lakers effect. In fact, it is the exact same thing as the Lakers effect. There are some players, and you see this a lot, there are some players that are incredible players or incredible shooters until they get to the Lakers or until they play with LeBron James. Then their shooting percentage just goes down incredibly. Probably because there's a different level of pressure being a Dallas Cowboy, being a LA Laker, then there is another team like the Houston Texans or like the Houston Rockets. No offense to those organizations, but there is a different type of pressure. There's a different type of stigma that's on you when you play for those type of teams. So I would expect them. I expect the LA Lakers to probably run their practices and run their organization a little closer to how Dallas runs their organization compared to a team like the Washington Wizards, you know? So I guess this is me saying when Dalton Schultz was talking about how Dallas run, I wasn't like, there wasn't a part of me like, oh, no. I was like, yeah, well, if there's any organization that I would think does that, it would be Dallas. So, yeah, let's move forward. The beauty about basketball is there isn't a linear way to success. And success isn't the same for everyone. I think that basketball is such a mirror to life. Just because you don't land in the same spot doesn't mean you haven't succeeded. And success looks drastically different for different people. You don't have to go the LeBron James route. You don't have to go the Steph Curry route. You don't have to go the Kevin Durant route. You don't even have to be able to get to that route. Doesn't mean that you haven't succeeded. I'm highlighting Mike James for becoming the all-time leading scorer in EuroLeague basketball history. Now, when you look at Mike James, when some people will look at Mike James, they could possibly see a failure. They can see a player that had a really good college career, yet couldn't really find a landing spot or a sticking spot in the NBA. And to his credit, he kept trying. He did the G League route. He kept trying to get on an NBA team. It just wasn't working out for him. And I'm not saying that he can't go to an NBA team, but he wasn't finding the success that he was looking for on an NBA team. So he went to the Euro Leagues. And obviously there is a difference in talent level with the Euro Leagues and NBA, but that's still a basketball league. You're still getting paid to do what you love to do, which is play basketball. Hell, if I can dedicate myself to working out as much as I'm supposed to play basketball, I would do it. I would have no problem going. I would love to experience that. I'm good enough to play overseas. Maybe not in, the A League, B League, but I'm good enough to play overseas. I know that about myself. I just don't have the time to dedicate my body, dedicate my time, dedicate my being to playing basketball, which you have to do, whether you're in the NBA or overseas. It is a legit lifestyle. And Mike James realized this whole NBA thing isn't really working out as much. And I'm not saying that door is closed, but let me be the best that I can be overseas and we'll see where that takes me. Well, now Mike James is in the history books, in basketball history books, as the leading scorer in EuroLeague history. Mind you, he plays on the same team as Kemba Walker. Think about that. The same Kemba Walker that led UConn to a national championship, the same Kemba Walker that was giving people buckets as a Charlotte Hornet and multiple teams in the league, he is on the same roster as Kemba Walker. And not only is he the all-time leading scorer for EuroLeague history, both of those moves were viewed differently. And I'm not even going to say that. For a while now, people, the viewpoint of it and the way that it's looked at is starting to change. But people looked at not really succeeding in the NBA and having to go to Euros as a failure. People were saying that Jabari Parker, who plays for Barcelona, I believe, failed. Wesley Johnson, who had to play overseas, failed. Kenneth Faried, who had to play overseas, failed. But yet, they're making money doing what they love to do. Yes, they may not be making NBA-type money, but they're making money. Hell, G League people, they'll say has failed. Like Isaiah Thomas having to play in the G League. And I think he put up like 32 or 35 points his first game back in the G League. What I'm saying is, don't minimize somebody's success because it doesn't look like the success that you thought it should look like. Don't minimize somebody's road because their road to their success doesn't look like your road to what you think is success. Mike James could have packed it up a long time ago. It was very apparent, whether we talk about the size, whether we talk about, you know, just the defensive fit. It was very apparent very early that Mike James, even though he can score with the best of them, he wasn't going to make a lasting impact in the NBA. And as we sit here today, he is arguably he is the greatest scorer. He is LeBron James, scoring-wise, of EuroLeague basketball history. And I think it's hilarious when you see a lot of people congratulating him, which rightfully so. You should congratulate somebody on that. But a lot of those people I was seeing shunned other people that did the same, like Dwight Howard or like DeMarcus Cousins. John Wall, players that have accepted going overseas, are playing currently overseas, and possibly could be playing overseas soon. I don't know. Now, yes, obviously Mike James wasn't on their level, but at the end of the day, they're still playing what they love to do. It was hilarious, man. People know, growing up, I was a big Dwight Howard fan. When he was with the Orlando Magic, I thought he was by far, and it wasn't a thought, he was by far the best center in the league when he was in it. And Dwight Howard plays for Puerto Rico now. And, you know, people are talking about how Dwight Howard needs to hang it up because, you know, he's not on an NBA team, or he can't make an NBA team now, or, he's not good enough to be on an NBA team, even if he wants to be on an NBA team. I don't see a lot of people talking about the fact of, as of this year, Dwight Howard, who was drafted in 2004, has been playing basketball for 20 years. Not saying he's been playing NBA basketball, but he's been playing basketball for 20 years. No one really is congratulating him on that. They're pretty much saying, hey, bro, chalk it up. Or Isaiah Thomas. Not the fact of, you know, obviously he was at a height, but he's not there anymore. But he's still playing in the G League and putting up buckets. Or didn't he drop like 80 or something in a pro league or a pro-am? The Jamal Crawford crossover thing. Jamal Crawford, who has never made a NBA All-Star game. I think his last game of his career, he dropped 50. Don't poo-poo on someone else's view of success. Shouts out Mike James. Put himself in the history books. And he pivoted. And with him pivoting, the minute or the when he did, and being a good basketball player, he now finds himself in the history book. So shouts out to Mike James for becoming the all-time scoring leader in EuroLeague history. Shouts out to you. Before we go, today or yesterday, as I'm shooting this, is today, is National Women's or International Women's Day. This is a day where we shine light on women and how important they are to life. Obviously, none of us would be here without a woman, but we shine light on women. This is their day. Now, I can go a bunch of different routes with this. I can talk about women in sports and seeing how, even though people may or may not realize it, the way that we view sports kind of has a direct effect on, or direct effect on how women affect sports, and how we're seeing a rise in college basketball. A lot of the popularity in college basketball now, or at least right now, is stemming from a woman, which is Caitlin Clark. We just saw the Vegas Aces selling out their, I think, entire season. We see ticket prices for the Indiana Fever going up because they're potentially going to get Caitlin Clark, and rightfully so. We can talk about the people that cover the game and how astute and how hardworking they are and how poignant they are. I've learned more about football from Mina Kimes than I can learn from a lot of NFL analysts. I can go a bunch of different routes. But for International Women's Day, or National Women's Day, whatever you want to call it, I want to focus on the women in my life. We all know the story. My story growing up isn't different from many other people in my position. It wasn't the easiest. I was raised by a single mother, Stephanie Bryan, and it was tough, you know. Money wasn't always there. We were homeless for a couple times. We were homeless a couple times. We had to stay on people's couches and people's floors. As unfortunate as it is, my story isn't much different from a lot of people's story on growing up with a single parent. On top of that, growing up with a single parent and having a younger sister, women, I've been around women my entire life, and I'm not saying that in like a player way. From my mom to my sister, to now my 5-year-old niece. I grew up in the church, so a lot of the women in the church they shaped me into who I am today. If it wasn't people talk about, I hear a lot of people question, was I upset with my mom because of how much we had to struggle growing up? And my answer is always no. I mean, it happened, and obviously when you're in it, it sucks. But like so many other people, my mom could have quit. She could have packed it up. She could have sent me off. She could have sent my sister off. And I'm sure she would have been much better without us, at least financially. I'm sure I'm sure there was times when she was just thinking, if I didn't have Jalen or if I didn't have Bailey, who was my sister, things would be much easier. But she didn't. She stuck it out. And I am who I am today because I had the strongest mom anyone can ask for. When I think about National Women's Day, I think about the fact that if it wasn't for some strong women in my life, whether that's my mother, whether that's my sister, whether that's my girl Brittany, I don't know where I'd be. See, it's not just a sports thing for me. When you hear me talk every single episode, you hear them. You know, you hear a son that looks up to his mom. You hear a brother that is proud of his sister. You hear an uncle that is so happy seeing his niece grow up and become a young girl and become her own person. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. If it wasn't for every single woman that poured just an ounce of love into me. Especially someone that needed it. Because I for damn sure needed it. Women are important. Everyone's important, but women are important. And as unfortunate as it is, I don't see the respect, the love, the gentleness a lot of times that should be attributed to women. And that's not just from men, that's from women as well. I think the word woman, the idea of a woman has been lowered. The standard of a woman has been lowered these days. That doesn't mean that you have to go with the crowd. That just means that that's what it feels like. So while I could go the sports route and talk, since this is a sports podcast, and talk about all the important women in sports, and if you looked at every single cover so far in March and going moving forward in March, every single cover is going to highlight a woman in sports. I wanted to take this time to highlight the women that have been most important to me and the women that have shaped who Jalen Demetrius Hunter is. So shouts out to them. Love you all. I thank you all. Because there are so many times when you could have gave up on me. And trust me, I know I wasn't the easiest to love. I wasn't the easiest to deal with. I was a curious kid. I still am curious to a sense, but I was a curious kid, so I would just do some head-scratching things, man. But I thank you all for being who you guys are, because who you guys are is essentially why I am who I am. Happy Women's Day. And there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to whoever you're listening. Please subscribe to whoever you're watching. If you are watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible. So tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. If you like the content, please subscribe. Also, please subscribe to the DSPs. If you are a listener, whether that's Apple Podcasts, whether that's Spotify, whether that's SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, please subscribe. It definitely means a lot. You guys are extremely important as well. I understand that some people just watch me, some people listen. All of you guys are important, and I appreciate you all. So please follow, please subscribe. Also, follow the socials, follow Instagram, follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily. That is where we can debate more. That's where we can go back and forth. You can tell me how much you hate my videos. You can tell me how wrong I am. We'll talk about it. And I appreciate everyone that follows and subscribe. Please subscribe to the socials. And yeah, happy Women's Day. And until next time, much love.